Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's do this. Let's power rank the power rankings. They are in. Once Monday Night Football is over, the power rankings come out the next morning around the NFL, and Seth and I each and every week at 9 o'clock on Tuesday, we look at the power rankings, and we ourselves power rank those people who are ranking the NFL teams on how good a job that they do. So I've got five of them, Seth, for purposes of this segment.
Okay.
What's so funny?
I guess do we power rank them, or do we basically just say, hey, whoever has the Texans ranked highest is number one?
That might end up happening coincidentally, I would say. I mean, it's happened every time, but I don't know that that's necessarily the
every
goal
single
going
time
in.
We've done it.
Yeah.
So here, the worst power ranking by far is that scoundrel Pete Prisco.
Pete Prisco's fifth of the five. We have five power rankings we're using this week. CBS, in no particular order, CBS, SI.com, The Athletic, ESPN, and USA Today. And Pete Prisco, scoundrel is the right word, Seth. The nefarious Pete Prisco has the Texans ranked 19th in the NFL. Seth, he's got them behind the Jags and the Colts in the division right now. Jags 15.
Colts look pretty good.
Colts 18. Colts right ahead of them at 18. They did look good.
Could the Texans have looked that good versus that Dolphins defense? It's a weird one because I feel like the Dolphins are primed to allow Nico Collins to have 270 yards receiving or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know. I don't want to just get cocky on behalf of a hypothetical or anything. But we'll wait for this to play out.
Here's what he says about the Texans. Pete Prisco's a man of few words. The offense didn't do much against the Rams, with the offensive line again a problem. That unit has to be better for C.J. Stroud.
It does, yes.
Yeah, I would agree
certainly
with
him.
Certainly,
there on we that. Go. Ariante Irsay has to be better. Look, I'd love to see him play some left tackle more than a few snaps, but that's not the way the Texans are choosing to operate these days. So we'll see.
The team the Texans play on Monday, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Prisco has them as the fourth best team in the NFL right now. I mean, they needed a missed field goal by Younghoe Koo to avoid overtime against the Falcons, who I'm sure are not the fifth best team in his power rankings.
I think the Falcons were able to get a lot of pressure on Gardner Minshew and Baker Mayfield. Yeah. But they could have versus Gardner Minshew.
That's a little racist of you. Yeah.
It's a way of, there's something about those two. There's just kind of a dirtbag quality to both of them that I continually mess them up. They both feel like a Florida type of quarterback.
Absolutely. Okay?
They grew up in Central Florida somewhere.
Yes.
So, so they got good pressure on Baker Mayfield. Apologies to Baker Mayfield.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where the Texans pass rush, I think, is going to be good. Just like the Texans pass rush was really good last week. They just didn't get that much time to get to Stafford because he was getting rid of the ball so quickly. The defensive backs need to be more dialed in. Mm-hmm. They got to, and the linebackers for the Texans. They can't be biting on play action just so aggressively as they were in that game.
All right. Fourth. So Pete Prisco, fifth. Fourth, Connor Orr, SI.com. Also has the Texans 19th. He gets rated above Pete Prisco because he has a couple more sentences in here. He put in a little more effort and embedded a tweet in the Texans analysis. Here's what Connor Orr has to say about your Houston Texans. Here's my question left over from the weekend. Was the Rams defense as good as I thought, or is the C.J. Stroud hangover just lingering a bit? My guess, this is Connor Orr saying this, my guess, a lot of teams aren't going to show this Texans offensive line this much trouble. Look at how much work Stroud had to do on completions, never mind the pressures that really affected his throws. So he's leaning into, hey, the world is going to be, by and large, much easier for the Texans on Sundays than this past Sunday.
No, and honestly, the Texans at times on the inside, they did a better job, I guess, on the whole than they did last year of some of the handling some of the stunts. But they had some bad moments too. I think the Rams are going to be a better defense than they were last year. I've been saying that all off season. That's not like a big, huge, bold prediction or anything. I mean, a lot of people have been saying that. But also the week one element and Chris Shula, the defensive coordinator for the Rams, really dialing up some funky stuff. That's hard to ambush teams like that every week as the regular season goes along. So credit to the Rams and their defense for doing what they did. I don't think it's going to be as bad as it was versus the Rams. Now, that's not like a ringing endorsement that you're going to win a Super Bowl or something, obviously, but I do think they're going to have some easier tests
as the season goes along. Waves of guys on that front four with the Rams, man. They were relentless. By the way, Connor Orr has Tampa Bay ninth, so he's a little lower than Prisco does, but Texans opponent ninth. All right, so that's number four, SI.com. Number three, as we power rank the power rankings, The Athletic, which uses their staff to put the rankings together, and they have a category each week, Seth, and the category this week for The Athletic is first impressions. What's the biggest first impression made by each of these teams? They've got the Texans ranked 17th, so a little higher than the previous two outlets that we had. The first impression The Athletic gets, Texans need help. And boy, they had the Texans 8th last week. So they had the Texans, based on losing to the Rams in a game on the road where you had the ball with 2 minutes left in the game and a chance to go in and take a lead had Dario Gumbawale not fumbled, they dropped them all the way to 17th from 8th. Here's what they say. First impressions, the offense needs help. The Texans made one of the surprise moves of the offseason, hiring Nick Caley as the OC to replace Bobby Slowick. The Caley era didn't exactly begin with a bang. Houston's leading receiver, rookie Jaden Higgins, had just 32 receiving yards. The Texans went 2-for-9 on third downs. The defense is great, but the offense, not a good start.
Huh, okay, well, let's take a look at somebody that's ranked higher on this power rankings. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, no, the Raiders are 20th in these power rankings.
Yeah.
But Chip Kelly, what did they say about Chip Kelly, a guy that was a candidate? Chip Kelly's offense is fun. Oh, there we go. Did anybody call Nick Caley's offense fun?
No. Yeah, Rams. The Rams.
Yeah.
The Rams thought it was a blast.
This is a fun offense.
Yeah, I love this offense.
Oh, man. What about another candidate? Now, I was not high on Cliff Kingsbury as a candidate at the time. Yeah. They didn't write anything about Cliff Kingsbury in here, but his offense has been more fun than what we've seen of the Nick Caley offense.
Dude, there's a lot of things that are more fun. Root canals.
Cliff Kingsbury would have been 2 years ago, obviously. Yeah. But now we're at that point in the season already where people are starting to think about things that might have been.
Yep. Tampa Bay 10th in the Athletic power rankings. USA Today is second in the power ranking of the power rankings. They also have Tampa Bay 10th, by the way. They have the Texans also at 17th, saying this: their defense, anchored by Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson, should be one of the league's best and look the part Sunday. But how long can it compensate for an offense, one that didn't find the end zone in week one, with this many prevalent issues?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking for much of the game, much of the first half especially, was, all right, okay, let's think back historically to teams that have won a Super Bowl with an awesome defense, the Bucks, the Ravens, and not much on offense. The thing is that neither of those teams had the type of seeming talent at quarterback. Like, that's the part that's really rough, is that you're looking at, like, man, all right, if we went into this season with Trent Dilfer as our quarterback, I'd say, like, all right, yep, this is what's going to have to look like.
Yeah, right.
I'm not in the mood for it to look like that. I'm not in the mood to right now be saying, well, look, the Texans defense was good, but and this is true, they do have to clean some things up on the back end especially. But I don't want that to be the thing that has to happen for this team to have a chance, obviously.
No, you can't have a quarterback that people can have a conversation about a $60 million a year contract with a straight face about, and be some team that tries to muck it together leaning on your defense to win 17-14. It's unacceptable. All right, number one, power ranking of the power rankings, ESPN, the worldwide leader, old reliable, DJ Bien-Aimé, writes for ESPN, and he wrote the synopsis for the Texans, in which they are ranked 16th. So the highest ranking the Texans have in the power ranking of the power ranking, Seth, 16th, barely in the upper half of the league.
They're an above average football team, Sean.
According to ESPN,
rankings. Yes. Yep. Best. They're in the lower quartile of the lower quartile of the upper half. Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Their category, because they, like the Athletic, do a category for each team each week, like some superlative. Best newcomer performance, they have Nick Chubb. DJ Bieniemy says Nick Chubb. He said Chubb ran well in his Texans debut, 60 yards on 13 carries. Compared with the other newcomers, the former All-Pro running back made a noticeable impact on the game with two runs over 10 yards, a positive EPA on 7 rushes per next-gen stats. EPA is expected points added. As the Texans continue to mesh with new OC Nick Caley's offense, having a reliable run game will ease the transition for quarterback C.J. Stroud.
The part of reliability that gets really interesting this week is, okay, can they rely on Nick Chubb to give you more of that performance when he's getting more than 13 carries? And can his body stay healthy? And there were stretches last year when he was with the Browns where he played every week before he broke his foot, and at times was getting, I want to say, into the upper teens in carries.
Yeah.
I guess that's just a huge question. Why was Nick Chubb limited to 13 carries in that game? And if, and potentially, you know, if the Rams could have gone down there at the end of the game, and they still had room for another first down.
Yeah.
You know, they might have, if they hadn't scored a touchdown, I don't know what would have happened. You know, Nick Chubb could have ended up with 11 carries in the game.
Yeah.
If the offense didn't have a realistic chance when they got back out there. So can you get him for 20 or 25 carries in a game?
It's funny because people will look at this. I'm curious what you think about my theory here. People will look at Nick Chubb and say, well, he's suffered season-ending injuries the last 2 years. Really got to manage Nick Chubb, yeah, and the wear and tear on Nick Chubb. And my thought on that is, okay, broke his foot last year. The foot's obviously healthy. Tore his knee. The knee is healthy, but maybe damaged to the extent he's never going to be the breakaway guy again. But he's clearly a healthy, yeah, NFL running back. The fact of the matter is, in terms of overall wear and tear, and when I think of a running back, I think of wear and tear from head to toe, like a car, an odometer. He's only played like 10 games in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, like the rest of his body, I would imagine, and now granted the, you know, 4 years before that or 5 years before that, I would imagine he was one of the most trafficked running backs in the league in terms of how much he was used. But over the last 2 years, he's played very little football. So I would imagine, depending on how the body heals, that he probably feels, maybe other than his foot and his knee, probably feels as good as he's felt since his rookie year, given how little he's played.
This is where it gets really interesting. Let's say hypothetically that Joe Mixon's actually feeling really good right now and they expect him to be back in week 5. At that point, I would say, all right, just go pedal to the metal. Nick Chubb, 25 carries a game.
Yeah.
Just go for it for these next 3 games. I suspect that they're not that as optimistic as that about Joe Mixon. Yeah. I have no idea. Just that's how it feels from just the general pessimism around the situation. Yeah. They gotta try to be disciplined and work him into a workload because if he goes down now, I don't know what they do. I don't know where Chubb, you mean? If Chubb goes down now and Joe Mixon's not coming back, you're really in a rough position.
As you were talking about that, I'm thinking, man, what would the backfield look like if they'd not signed Nick Chubb? I mean, they probably maybe would have gone and signed somebody else, yeah, you know, but they didn't sign Chubb until like right before OTAs. They signed him like June 10th.
Whatever it was with Chubb, it feels like it was probably related to Joe Mixon's situation.
I think so too. Yes,
but maybe they didn't think it was too scary with Joe Mixon, so they just wanted to, just in case, we'll take a flyer on Nick Chubb. But yeah, knowing what we know now with Joe Mixon, it's cool that it's working out with Nick Chubb, but I kind of wish they'd been more aggressive with getting somebody that was less of a medical experiment than Nick Chubb.
Okay, you were at training camp. You were at training camp. Should Juwan Jordan get a pop at this thing right now? He's on the practice squad. He looked very spry in training camp this year.
I don't know.
I know he's tiny. Yeah. Yeah.
I know he's tiny, but that's the thing. He's a nice compliment to Nick Chubb.
Yeah.
I mean, right now, behind Nick Chubb, you've got Ogunbowale and Damian Pierce as the bigger body guys that you feel like can at least be your main back.
Yeah.
And then everything beyond that is Woody Marks and Juwan Jordan are smaller guys that you're going to be a little bit limited in how much you can do if they're the main guys, and especially because they're both young. But, yeah, I would, like, honestly, yes, I don't – until Dameon Pierce, I mean, Dameon Pierce hurt you in multiple ways in that game.
Dude.
And I think Jawar Jordan I think Jawar Jordan, A, would have had a better chance of catching that ball on that last drive, and B, could have done more with it than Dameon Pierce.
Yeah, I hate saying this. I feel like I caveat it every time because everybody loves Dameon Pierce. You're burning daylight with any snap that is centered around Dameon Pierce touching the football right now. You're just burning daylight. It's a waste of time, unfortunately. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey, football talk on Sports Radio 610, which we just did to great aplomb, is presented by Paramount Plus. Sylvester Stallone is back in the original hit series Tulsa King?
Oh, Tulsa King is back. We've been wondering when Tulsa King was coming back.
Tulsa King is awesome. I love Tulsa King. This season, Dwight faces his most dangerous adversaries yet. He's faced some dangerous dudes, too.
They were pretty dangerous previously.
Very dangerous, yeah, but it's even more dangerous now, Seth.
He wasn't taking on your grandma's bridge club, I'll tell you that much.
Got that right. Forcing him to fight for everything he's built and to protect his empire. Stream the new season. I'm calling Amy right after this. We love Tulsa King. Stream the new season of Tulsa King on Sunday, September 21st, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
It's the nice thing about streaming. You know what I will not be doing is streaming it on a Sunday in week three of the NFL season.
God, no.
But I'll stream the hell of it on a Tuesday.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you that much.
Absolutely. Rewatch Texans, stream Tulsa King. That's the agenda come week three of the NFL season. All right, coming up next, the injury bug has hit the Texans. What is the solution for each of the positions where we just found out yesterday they're going to be dealing with stuff for a while here? We'll get to that coming up next.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so the injury bug has hit the Texans. We already know Joe Mixon. We have no idea how long he's going to be out for. As far as the war of attrition in week one, Cade Stover is going to be out indefinitely with a broken foot. We found that out yesterday. Jake Andrews is going to be out for the foreseeable future with a high ankle sprain. So you lose your starting center. You lose your tight end that played the most snaps out of any of the tight ends, out of your two tight ends. Cade Stover was, 57% of the snaps. He's part of this offense.
And Cade Stover did some good things in that game. I think both tight ends took some lumps versus some really, really good defensive ends, and that's not a surprise or anything. But, yeah, Cade was one of those guys where you look at and you think, what I was hoping to see was, some steady improvement over the course of the few weeks as he's in a new offense, but also playing for an offensive coordinator who is a tight ends coach. Man, you might really get the best version of whatever Cade Stover is going to end up being. And as a blocker, especially, he's just got more potential and upside than Dalton Schultz.
Yeah.
Great. Dalton Schultz is cool. He's like, in terms of loves this offense, wants to really buy into all the blocking and everything, but he's just physically not going to be the same guy that Cade Stover potentially could be.
This tight end room is kind of a crisis situation right now because the plan at the outset of training camp was just to roll back the three guys you had last year. That was one of the few rooms where you made no changes. I mean, it appeared as though, Seth, the plan was going to be Dalton Schultz, Cade Stover, and a repaired knee, Brevin Jordan. You lose Jordan to a torn ACL again. You have Irv Smith, who they also brought back. He was on the team at the end of last year. He suffers an injury, and he's on IR with Brevin Jordan, and neither of those guys are on the IR designation where you can bring them back. And now Cade Stover is out for who knows how long. D'Amico's supposed to meet with the media today, so maybe we learn more at least about whether or not it's a long-term IR-type injury or it's a short-term. He could be broken foot. Feels like an IR thing to me, right? What's the solution here at tight end? Do you think it's as simple as calling up Harrison Bryant and Luke Lachey?
I think so. Yeah. I think that, and probably Harrison Bryant, just by virtue of his NFL experience, and is a guy that's a willing blocker. I think can It's probably going to, I would guess it's going to be Harrison Bryant, unless Luke Lachey really just impressed them in practices or whatever and stuff that we might not have seen in preseason games. So you've got bodies there. Earlier in the first segment of the show, we had somebody say that we were treating this Cade Stover injury as if the Texans had lost Rob Gronkowski or something. Like, A, no, we were not. B, right, he's not an all-pro tight end or anything. But I don't know if you noticed, but the offense in general didn't look that good the other day. No. So this would be like if you have an old, you got an old beat-up vehicle, but it's your only vehicle, and all of a sudden, the three of your spark plugs are shot.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a worse vehicle than it already was.
Yes.
So yeah, it's a big concern that Cade Stover was potentially going to be, I think, a good thing for this offense. And the other thing that the tight ends allow them to do is they're able to, when you're nervous about your offensive line, okay, you can run out of these condensed formations. You can have two tight ends in. You can have a fullback. Whatever you have to do to add more bodies there, then you can do that. So you're down one of those guys. Yakob Johnson being able to play both fullback and tight end is probably the likeliest. Yakob Johnson might not get sent back down to the practice squad this week. I think that
He was a call-up this week. That's right. Yeah.
So, Yakob, it might be as simple as maybe they bring Harrison Bryant up also, but Yakob Johnson allows you to keep an extra body in there and still add some extra protection for the offensive line, but without altering things too much.
Yeah, this is where this – I mean, it's week one heading into week two, and in my mind, we're already in places where you're like, oh, you got to start keeping track of some of this stuff. You can only bring back 8 guys from the IR during the season. They've already got Jalen Reed, the safety, who's on designated to return IR. You got 2 guys in your starting center and, you know, tight end, 1A and 1B. You've got 1B who's maybe injured enough to go on IR, but I think they would like him back later in the year. And some of these practice squad guys, you can only call a guy up 3 times from the practice squad before you got to make a decision on him and put him out there on waivers to be picked up. So it's... The Texans view the roster not as a 53-man. They view it as a 70-man roster, and they're getting tested on that here early in the season as to how they juggle these positions, for sure.
The foot, let's see. Can you off the top of your head remember a time where there was a foot injury that ended up being a simple foot injury? I feel like in my mind, every time there's a foot injury, it ends up being a long, drawn-out affair where, hey, Matt Schaub had a Liz Frank, and supposedly it's no big deal, but man, he never seemed like the same guy after that Liz Frank.
Ever.
Kevin Johnson back in the day, foot injury, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it never seems like a foot is as simple as just a foot. Yao Ming. I'm 100% positive that I'm forgetting a bunch of guys or whatever, but that's the way it feels, damn it.
Yep. Jake Andrews out with a high ankle sprain. Honestly, when they threw Jarrett Patterson in there, I'm like, okay. I mean, I don't have enough of a body of work with Jake Andrews to be super upset over. I mean, I'm upset for him, obviously. He's getting a chance to play, but I like, as far as what I think the effect is going to be on the team, I guess the only thing would be CJ's been working with Jake Andrews the entire preseason, and there's a chemistry thing there, I would imagine. But he's worked with Jarrett Patterson before too.
My impression from training camp was that I thought that Jake Andrews was better in the run game than Patterson, but that I wasn't super stoked about either of them in pass protection. And that's the biggest difference. But also, I think Jarrett Patterson has shown before, at least, that I think they trust him more with the calls than they trusted Juice Scruggs on picking up a new offense and everything. Jake Andrews was the starter for a reason, but it doesn't feel like that big of a drop-off to
me. That's what I mean.
As opposed to, if Chris Myers were the starting center.
Correct. Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So I put up a poll yesterday, Seth, and I don't know if you've looked at this or not.
I have not looked at the results. I've looked at the poll, but not the results.
Okay, the poll is this, and it's really just sort of a rehash of week one. Simple one. Pender poll for Texans fans. What are you most concerned about after week one? One of the choices is other, so I said if other, just tell us what it is, reply to it. But here are the choices. O-line shuffle, penalties, play calling, other.
Okay, I'm going to tell you mine.
Okay.
But then I have to guess what everybody else was going to say.
Correct.
So the three choices plus other. O-line shuffling, for me, it's especially a concern just because it exposed how uncomfortable they are with the depth at offensive line. Yep. And that's one thing that happens. And, hey, if you go out and overspend on in free agency on an offensive line, you might not get the bang for the buck. You know, it might not be the most efficient, but at the very least, you create a deeper offensive line.
Yeah.
You know, you don't expect every guy you sign to be an all-pro or anything, but you've got a deeper offensive line. The Texans don't have that depth right now. Penalties, it's just not fun to think about penalties. It does concern me that they had these pre-snap penalties yet again.
Sure.
And then play calling, I'm going to echo what CJ had said in the postgame, which is because of those pre-snap penalties, because of some of the sacks and what have you, they didn't really get into Nick Caley's bag, I think, on a lot of the third downs. So I'm gonna hold off judgment on that. So for me, it's O-line shuffling. I think that most people who responded to this poll also agree with me and said O-line shuffling.
You are correct on that. Now, would you care to take a stab at the percentage of people that chose O-line shuffling?
Okay, penalties is just – penalties doesn't put butts in the seats. You know, it just doesn't. No matter how real an issue it is, it just doesn't put the butts in the seats.
Yep.
Play calling, I think a lot of people too – now, people are upset about Nico Collins not getting more targets. I get that, but that's also easy to tie in to both the offensive line, the penalties, and all of that. So I'm going to say 54% said O-line shuffling.
You know what? Give the man a ding. 50.1% within 5%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 50.1% said the O-line shuffle. I think what's
my confidence level in that one was about the lowest it's been. So
you nailed it.
All right.
No, good. You nailed it. I think what's interesting, if you were to take that choice and then create its own poll, like, oh, so why is it the O-line shuffling?
Yeah.
I think you brought up a different point than how most people are feeling that way, because it's just disorganized and you're messing with a rookie who you've got a decent investment in. Like, what are you doing? You had Ursary playing left tackle the last month, and now you're moving him to right tackle against Jared Verse the day of the game. I think your view on it is interesting, which is the O-line shuffle is being caused by the fact that you don't have good solutions behind these guys.
Yeah, people kept saying, why aren't they putting Juice Scruggs in at right guard? And my thought was, why is Juice Scruggs the backup right guard?
Yeah.
That's the part that for me has been curious. And that's where, but I've been, it's not like I've been, you know, skewering them for it. In my mind, it's been like, all right, well, maybe they feel that much better about Juice Scruggs in this system and with proper coaching and everything. That's where I'm going to give them a pass on it. But then when they don't put him up there because they still don't trust him, then I'm immediately think like, okay, well, the pass I was giving you obviously wasn't a valid pass.
Yeah.
You don't feel good about Juice Scruggs either. Why is Juice Scruggs the backup swing interior offensive lineman? That's the part that doesn't make any sense.
If Ed Ingram, who himself probably isn't a starting caliber right guard, at least hasn't been over the course of his career, if losing him is causing you to shuffle three or four spots on the offensive line because you don't trust his backup, then you need a different backup.
Right. And that's where, if you go out and spend in free agency, at the very least, even if you don't get a great, maybe if you overpay for a guy who's just an okay right guard, then your backup is a guy like Ed Ingram.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense to have Ed Ingram as your backup. But now you've got a guy who's backing up Ed Ingram, and yet you still don't even feel like he's worthy of backing up Ed Ingram, apparently.
I hate saying this, but I think it feels like the reason that Blake Fisher and Juice Scruggs are on the team is because they were second-round picks.
Yeah,
you know, they were day three picks. I don't know that they'd be on the team. They've been that bad throughout training camp.
And for whatever it's worth, Ed Ingram is he did start. He was a full time starter his first couple years in the league. It was last year where he got benched midway through the season. This is his fourth season in the NFL. But he was he's labeled a disappointment in Minnesota.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast. By the way, the other percentages. So 50.1% for O-line shuffle. The other half of the choices here, penalties, 22%, play calling, 14.5%, other, 13.2%. Next segment, I want to read a couple of the responses to other to you and see if you're as concerned about
okay.
A couple of these are interesting.
Okay, yeah. Okay, cool. I'm interested in that.
So we'll do that. And also, I found a new favorite college football coach because he sticks up for my people, the Gamblers. We will have that for you. And we'll find out what the guy's got going on In the Loop as well. We'll do that coming up next.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so we were just digging into a poll question I put up yesterday about what the biggest concern is that fans have after week one. And far and away, the shuffling on the O-line was the biggest thing. Isn't it crazy to think, like, if Ed Ingram was just healthy, I don't know what, well, like, I guess we would be more concerned if the O-line just went out and played poorly. It's the fact that I think a lot of fans feel like however the offensive line played, there was a cause and effect in their decision to move three guys around the day of the game because Ed Ingram couldn't play. So that was far and away number one, 50% of the vote. Penalties got 22% of the vote. Play calling got, I don't know, like 13 or 14%. And then other. And I asked people to reply to the poll on Twitter. If you responded with other, tell me what other entails. And I jotted a few of these down, Seth, and I'm curious how big a concern these are for you. And some of these are a little more granular than offensive line shuffling or play calling. Stingley's health.
Yeah.
Are you concerned that him getting twisted up like a pretzel? I mean, I guess we'll find out on Thursday this week. I would say it's a lock he shows up on the injury report as limited in practice, at a minimum, limited in practice with a hip. That's my prediction.
I think that, yes, 100% Stingley's health. And you go back to previous to last season, he'd missed time in pretty much every season going back till God knows when, his freshman year in college.
2019.
And it was very clear. Stingley's not one of these guys that needs to be dramatic and let everybody know that he's injured. Oh. He was having a hard time moving around. I mean, by virtue of he was having a hard time tracking Davante Adams and I don't think they could do things that they would have liked to do in terms of him shadowing people in that game. And you could see after he got up off the ground a few times, he was noticeably limping. I don't think that's just him being dramatic or anything. I think it was really bothering him.
Yeah, no, it's him.
You can see it in his body language. You could see it in his actual performance on the field. That's a big one.
I'm with you. I'm concerned about that. I'm not looking forward to this injury report this week. Jalen Petrie in coverage.
Yeah. And this is something I don't know. I don't know why it's been bothering me all offseason. I'm just kind of wondering, what do they do about the fact that Jalen Petrie is not an actual cornerback, and yet they put him in situations where you'd like to have an actual cornerback out there, like when you're manned up on the slot. And my thought was that they were going to have to get kind of creative in how they used him, because there's certain times where you just can't risk him being manned up on Puka Nacua, and yet there we were. And I wonder if maybe Stingley not being available or as capable of traveling all the time, or just kind of trying to make up for some things, made that worse. It's a concern, yeah. And it's one that shouldn't be a surprise to the Texans. Was D'Amico surprised that Jalen Petrie was struggling against Puka Nacua?
I don't know.
Because we watch practice. We haven't gone back to last year when they started putting him in the slot. You would see, like, okay, there's certain matchups you just don't want you got to be careful about with Jalen Petrie, because he's not a cornerback. I don't even get mad at him about it. He's not a cornerback. You can't ask him to do cornerback things.
He's not, but it does kind of suck to have something like this that you've got to manage with a guy who you just gave a contract extension to. You just gave him $13 million a year. Like, is the version of Jalen Petrie that we got last season before he got hurt in week 12? Remember, he missed the last part of the season.
Yeah.
Is that a $13 million player last year?
Right. Yeah, we saw it in games last year where, okay, there's times in coverage where he's not that
Yeah,
guy.
That's a concern I have, because he's now, you're now committed to him. For at least a couple of years, you're committed to him, and they like him too. I think he's not as an egregious a favorite of the coaches as Damian Pierce is. Like, I just don't think Damian deserves to be on the field at this point. Jalen Petrie is 100% a guy who gets the benefit of the doubt, even when he's not playing well, from the coaches. We asked Nick Caserio about that on this show 2 years ago when Jalen was having a bad year, and he said, I'd take 1,000 Jalen Petries. He's getting paid as much for what he does, for what he is off the field, maybe even more so than what he's been on the field. Like, he does make impact plays every now and then, but he's got a huge Achilles heel that this team has to manage around if he's going to play enough snaps, if he's going to play enough snaps to be worth $13 million a year. You're paying somebody $13 million a year in your defensive backfield, man. They better be on the field for 80, 85% of the snaps.
Yeah.
And that means that Jalen Petrie is going to be on the field when opposing offensive coordinators are going to be able to do what Sean McVay did last Sunday and find a way to get your best guys manned up on him at the worst possible times for the Texans.
Yeah, Jalen Petrie is on the field for 92% of the snaps in that
game. He's going to be out there.
And yeah, it's that's where I think Jalen Smith and perhaps some of the other guys, you got to be you got to figure out exactly when maybe Jalen Petrie is going to be playing safety instead. They got to figure out ways for that not to happen again. I honestly don't get mad at Jalen Petrie when he gets beat by Puka Nacua. There's certain times, like on that very last third down conversion by the Rams, Jalen Petrie was biting hard on the play action.
Yeah.
So he could have been in a better position, but I don't know if it would have turned out much better,
no.
You know, if they still targeted Puka Nacua on
no,
that play.
I don't think so either. So Petrie in coverage. The other one I jotted down, again, these are concerns that people have after week one. These are people who put other in the poll that I put up. CJ's happy feet.
Mm-hmm.
Are you concerned about CJ's happy feet?
I am a little bit, just because I struggle with this, because there's times where I'll say, okay, why'd you run there, CJ, when he had a clean pocket? There was one play in the game where I really felt like he should have recognized that he had an easy option right over the middle of the field before he took off running. But there's other times where, on the one hand, I want to say, hey, wait for the play to develop. You've got a clean pocket. But at the same time, there were times last year where I criticized him for not getting rid of the ball quickly, because hey, you've got five-man protection. What'd you expect the pocket to hold up?
Yeah.
What it comes down to is situationally, on third down, I think especially, that's when, look, hang out in the pocket a little bit. If you've got a clean pocket, even if you don't trust the guys in front of you, you got to try to convert this. Versus on first down, that's when, all right, if it's an easy 5 yards, either by pass or run, then by all means, take the easy money. It's a matter of finding that balance. The thing that concerns me long-term is just him not stepping up into the pocket.
Yeah.
When it's a clean pocket.
There was that one sack on Sunday where he didn't do it. It was bad.
I mean, that's where you just don't let your eyes drop and, you know, like look like the later stage Russell Wilson or something. That's the part that I feel like he used to be better at it. I think he was almost like he was better at it his rookie year at times than he is now.
Yeah, yeah. You never want to go full Russell Wilson. Not these days. There was a time where it was okay.
Yeah.
Not these days. So I have a new favorite college coach. I think this is something John Lopez can appreciate. He fancies the occasional wager. John Lopez does. My new favorite college football coach is Lane Kiffin, because following the Ole Miss win over Kentucky this past weekend, in which the spread was 8.5, and Ole Miss was up by 10 late in the game and allowed a field goal, allowed Kentucky to cover the number. They lost 30-23, so Kentucky covers the 8.5-point spread. Here's what Lane Kiffin had to say in his postgame.
Really glad how the players played, especially in the second half, second quarter, and you know, they fought hard. That's a really hard team that plays really close games. So proud of our guys. Sorry to a lot of gamblers there at the end.
Hey, apologize to the gamblers. That's a good job. 8 seconds left. Kentucky kicks a field goal to make it 30-23, and that was the end of the game.
Yeah.
Thank
that's,
you.
Go ahead.
Oh no, that's all right.
You know this, guys. Most coaches know exactly what the point spread.
Lane Kiffin definitely knows.
And most do.
Yeah.
Most do.
Yeah.
And that was good that he was honest about it.
I thought Sark looked like he was trying to cover the spread, because mm-hmm. I had San Jose State plus 36.5, and Texas is up 31, and he was driving at the end of that game.
Yeah.
But they fumbled, thank God. Yeah.
For college coaches especially, it's a great way to make the alumni happy.
Yes.
No question.
They want to bet on their team. They want to bet on their team, and whether you're heavily favored or heavy underdogs or whatever, and you want to at least give your fans that.
Yeah.
Whether you're winning or losing, just give them a little something extra to feel good about after the game.
Yep.
Yeah, but speaking of the alumni, you talk about covering the spread. I think he's trying to cover his ass, if we're going to be honest. Like, there's a little bit of heat that's starting coming his way.
At least
as a
he beat
caller.
Kentucky this time. He lost to Kentucky.
Oh, no, I was talking more about Sark as opposed to...
Oh, Sark.
Lane's flying high. I don't think Lane could be in a better place for himself.
No, Sark's feeling the heat a little bit, no question. Crosstalk brought to you by D&M Auto Leasing. How we doing, gentlemen?
Fantastic. How are you today?
I'm really, really good. Did you guys watch the Monday night game last night?
Yes.
Do you feel any differently about the Texans' strategy with putting their offensive line together after watching these two high-spending
teams? Oh, boy, have you seen our rundown?
Huh? No, I've not. This seems like something you guys would want to talk
about. Tune in at 1 p.m. Okay. We did a little bit of a deep dive into what other teams are doing on the offensive line versus the Texans.
I would say in Chicago, they ain't feeling great about it right now.
Not Chicago, but Green Bay, Denver,
Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Minnesota, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So what is the what's the question of the day?
All right, so y'all saw, and I know you talked about Brian Callahan. He didn't know that an elbow equals 2 feet.
Yeah, how crazy is that?
So what's something that tells you all you need to know about someone, especially a coach?
So the fact that he didn't know that an elbow equals 2 feet, that's all you need to know. He's a bad coach.
Yeah, that's all I need to know.
Would you have I saw people saying that was a fireable offense.
I don't know about that, but that's all I need to know.
He's certainly
not on the good side.
It would factor into his employee evaluation.
Good way to put it.
HR, yeah.
You know what? On the football side of things, that Hard Knocks offseason with the Giants, was a really bad look for Joe Shane, the GM, but I thought there were some Brian Daboll nuggets in there where you could tell that he went into the draft – like almost just having, he made some comment about how like, oh yeah, I watched that guy on film a little bit this morning, like the day of the draft, like as if he was just kind of learning about these guys on the fly. That I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know if I would ever admit to that if I were an NFL head coach. And yet there he was.
That's a good one. That's an all you need to know. Okay. So does it have to be something they say? Can it be something they
do? I'll give you a couple of examples for coaches. For me, I'm not saying it's all I need to know, but I think it's a sure sign that he's feeling something. And Reggie referenced Sark. When you start talking in non sequiturs and gobbledygook at press conferences, talking about, I don't look at your face when you're peeing and all this other stuff like Sark did, that's a sign. And the other one for me with regular people is if they say they're not a dog person.
Oh, you're not down with that.
All I need to know.
Yeah, I'm not either. I like dogs a lot. Yeah. I'm a big dog fan.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something that people do that's like, it really makes me question why I had even to that point sat down with them for a meal. If you go out to dinner with people and they want to itemize like a nice dinner, you know, like you go and like you get the check and you're like, hey, I'm not talking about when we're at the Super Bowl and we got to get individual checks because we're expensing it. I'm talking about, I'm really excited to go out with this couple.
Yeah.
We go out with them and then like.
Well, we didn't have dessert.
Never again.
Never.
That is an either one of us is picking up the whole tab, and you get it next time, or it's a we split the check down the middle situation.
Yeah. What if somebody says, "Hey, I've got a gift card, and it's only got actually $3 on the gift card," which I did to Sean once.
And was that all you had? Was the gift card?
For some reason, it was a weird situation. I don't think it, for whatever reason, I didn't have my wallet. It was something weird. Yeah. I don't remember. I
forgot my wallet.
That's why.
There's another one.
No, I made up for it.
Every time Seth hits me up for a meal, I'm like, new phone, who dis?
The biggest one in life is, now this, it matters how the person delivers it and how often they say it. But when somebody says, hey, I'm just speaking the truth, or I'm just telling the truth, like in such a way that almost, you can say anything you want without any regard to somebody's feelings or being polite or anything, as long as it's actually true. Like, oh, I called your daughter ugly. What? I'm just saying
the truth.
Specifically to that point, the people that are like, yeah, people don't like me because I'm honest. I'm like, no, you're a jerk.
Right,
you're a jerk.
Right. Yes. Nobody ever dislikes people only because. Because they're honest. Yeah, there's something more to it than just that.
That's a good one.
That's a great point. And this might hit a little close to home. I do think that, and maybe I'm wrong for this, when I hear like someone in football who I know we in football can be a little bit caveman at some point, when they start talking about the process,
yeah,
I do feel a little bit better. Like, I do understand that that doesn't inherently mean that they're good at their jobs, but I'm like, okay, so we're not just going to go off of quarterback wins. We're not just going to be like, well, you won the game, so everything is fine.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to handle the process of this. I think that that puts a better light on it, spin on it for me. And maybe that's a place where I can be scammed.
So you feel better about, yeah. You're easily sold to, just like me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, I've got one along those lines. And I know Meltzer hates this particular person. It's not a particular person. It's a person who type. Says this.
Yeah.
A type.
Type of person.
Defense wins championships.
Oh, yeah.
That means you don't have an opinion. That means you're lazy. Yes. Defense wins championships. Guy.
Hey, man.
Yeah. So that's a good
one. Just general sports cliche guy that kills a statement or kills a conversation with, well.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, no, it is. That's one in sports in general. It is like people love falling. They fall in love with the notion that there's one thing that's going to fix things or one thing that's the problem, because they love to say like, well, that's not the reason they're a bad team. And like, yeah, I'm not saying it's the only reason they're a bad team.
Yeah.
I'm saying
it's
a relevant one, right? Yeah.
Oh,
but
man.
They try to shut down an argument, be like, oh, that one thing is going to fix them and that'll be, that's not the people will say, well, like, that's not the problem with the Astros.
Or
like,
shout out to Ryan Clark, right? Like the, you never played the game.
Oh yes, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That tells you a lot now, doesn't it?
Yeah, when an athlete says that, if I were to say, Sean, you don't know because you didn't play the game, that's me quitting on my actual job. Because it's like, okay, my job is to explain why I feel that way because I played the game.
That's right.
And not to just try to act like it's a choice. Because otherwise we could end every discussion with like, oh, nope, Sean, you know what? You didn't play the game.
Yeah,
right. No.
I win.
Seth wins.
No, I win. I win.
I want to start hearing that now, by the way, just like an opera. But the best part about it, Seth, I want you to throw it in. I want you to throw it in places where it doesn't make sense. Like, you guys are having a conversation about movies. Well,
at the end of every play,
you
didn't
play the game. Yes, the ultimate trump card for ever. It's the red button. Yeah.
You know what? I think that's like the fan version of that. I think we do, but I think it's relevant. Is when people act like, oh, why are you guys making such a big deal out of Laremy Tunsil's penalties? I feel like we're allowed to say, you don't know because you weren't there.
Yeah,
there's you haven't been there, man.
There's something to being there for sure.
The one that's true, 100% true, that bothers me is when they talk about receivers blocking. Who was the Texans receiver all the time that back in Kevin Walter. Boy, he can really block.
I
know it's true, but I'm like, how about catching the ball too?
Yeah, that helps. That helps.
The game in its essence is about blocking and tackling, John Lopez.
Yeah, they don't say catching. It's blocking and tackling.
The one I used to hate was from coaches. Because Sean, you know, nobody turns a compliment into an insult better than me. when somebody would say like, Seth, if we just had 22 guys like you, we'd win the Super Bowl every year. And I'd be like, that's odd because I don't seem to recall being the highest paid player on the team. So I don't think you're actually going out and trying to stock up on as many Seth Paynes as possible.
That's beautiful. See, that was
I appreciate the sentiment.
That was
to call you.
The beginning of your career as a radio host was your take on that take, which is, that is a horrible, horrible take. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, Seth, antibodies to you, my friend. I will see you tomorrow.
Antibodies to you, and be prepared for some hard truths on your texts later on.
Oh, I cannot wait.
I got some things I got to tell you.
Get off my chest. All right, we're done. We are out of time. You are listening to KILT AM. Seth dinging that bell
was
the funniest visual ever. Oh, my God. KILT AM, KILT FM HD2, Houston, an Odyssey sports station.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. You're seeing exactly what people outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.